Welcome back, folks. We have U.S. Representative Steve Scalise, who was just reelected to office, and we wish him congratulations for same. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell, and great to be back with you.
Steve, a lot happened Tuesday evening. I think a lot of folks were surprised by the breadth and depth of the win. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a historic night. I got to travel with President Trump and, you know, go to some of the swing states. I was in every swing state, and you just saw the energy. You know, you had Trump rallies. I mean, Sunday I was with President Trump in North Carolina and in Georgia, and, I mean, thousands of people inside packed arenas, but there would be thousands of people outside who couldn't get in, but they just wanted to be around the event. And, you know, you just saw this, you know, kind of force of nature that, you know, President Trump was talking about real issues that matter to people. And I think as everybody's trying to decomp and figure out how did it happen, how did Trump run the table on every swing state, seven swing states, Trump won all six that have been counted, and he's leading in Nevada, and he won the popular vote. And people that are trying to figure it out, to me, it's not complicated. President Trump was talking about the pocketbook issues that I saw everywhere I went. I've been in most states in this country in the last 2 months campaigning. Everywhere I went, people were talking about the open southern border, the high cost of food at the grocery store, the high cost of energy, and how do we fix it? And we were talking about specific things we would do to fix those problems. And the other side was talking about Nazis and racism and Hitler and, you know, and just almost insulting people as opposed to talking about how you fix the problems that are affecting struggling, hardworking families. So that's what I saw everywhere I went. I was not surprised that President Trump won, but it gives us an opportunity, Newell, to really go and solve these problems in January, and we're already focused on it. We're already planning what those first 100 days would look like in January to get our economy back on track, to produce more energy in America, which would be great for Louisiana and coastal restoration, to get regulations under control so you can, you know, run your small business without having to worry about federal agencies trying to shut you down every day, just allow you to play by the rules like every other country. Those are the sort of things that we're going to be focused on in lowering costs for families, getting inflation under control.
Wednesday morning, I was completely mystified because I turned on mainstream media and immediately they started with the isms, right? We were sexism, racism. And in my monologue that morning, I said it couldn't be that the general public's not ready for gender reassignment surgery for prisoners on the public dole, right? Couldn't be open border. It couldn't be public benefits for illegals that come into the country. It couldn't be the government standing between parents and their children. No, I don't think that couldn't be it. Exotic mandates that they've been issuing one after the other. Workarounds to existing law relative to student debt relief. How many times does the Supreme Court have to slap the hands of the administration to tell them you can't do this? And then, as you point out, the pocketbook issues. It couldn't be any of that. It had to be sexism and racism. And they're the ones that have been preaching to the Republicans about how divisive we are. Really?
Yeah. And again, when you go to a Trump rally, for example, and they demonize President Trump and just ways I've never even seen. He's talking about uplifting things. People were very upbeat, positive. And like I said, like thousands of people lined up outside trying to get in who knew they couldn't get in, that just wanted to be a part of it. And, you know, you talk about the issues that we were focused on. We were not just talking about what people were upset about. We were talking about how to fix it. You know, how do you secure the border? You know, when Donald Trump would say, hey, you know, all these criminals that are coming into our country illegally, we're going to deport them. Well, man, you saw the left go nuts and, oh, you can't deport people. Well, guess what? We're a nation of laws, Newell. You know, let's get back to the rule of law. Let's for the million people we let into our country legally every year, we're the most generous nation in the world. So we're not saying we're closing down the country. We're just saying you've got to come here legally. And we're not taking everybody's prisoners from their jails, you know, which most countries are doing. They're releasing their prisoners and sending them to America, and they're committing violent crimes here against our people. This is lunacy. And the fact that the other side did not want to change that, you know, I think they paid a price at the polls on Tuesday. And so now we're going to go to work fixing those problems, and I think it's going to be encouraging to people. You saw the stock market do well, but I think you're also going to see people's pocketbooks do well too when they're paying less at the pump and their monthly utility bills are lower, and they're seeing a more upbeat attitude when they deal with the problems and crime issues that are around their communities.
Well, you get to hear a lot more of what's going on. I'm curious what terms they're using for the California voters that are predominantly liberal and very progressive. In fact, in progressive LA, they voted out George Gascon, a progressive DA. I wonder what they're saying about those voters. And in that same jurisdiction, they overwhelmingly approved Prop 36 to retreat Prop 47. They gave all kinds of favorable treatment to the, as you pointed out, offenders of the law.
Yeah,
are they xenophobic? Are they racist? What are they?
You know, the Mark Cuban. Think about the Mark Cuban comments, you know, where Mark Cuban, and I was actually, you know, it was helpful to us that he did this because it just reminded people how hateful the other side was when he literally insulted half the women in America and said, oh, gee whiz, women in America that support Donald Trump are stupid. Well, guess what? They're not. And in fact, you know, I know Susie Wiles, who yesterday was, you know, made history by being named the first female chief of staff to a president of the United States. And she's incredibly competent and qualified. I mean, she was the co-chair of the Trump campaign. I was with her Sunday when we were going from, you know, Trump rally to Trump rally, and I've worked with Susie on a number of things. She's going to be a great asset to the Trump administration. And there's so many other qualified, competent women in Trump's orbit that have always been there, you know, and they make those kind of comments. And it just, I think they're living in such a bubble that they don't know what the real world is really like. They've been living amongst people that just talk like far left progressives from California for so long that they don't realize the rest of the world is fed up with it. The rest of the country, the smash and grab stuff where, hey, if you go into a Walgreens and you take $995 worth of stuff, you're not going to be prosecuted. Well, guess what? All the Walgreens in San Francisco shut down, so you can't even go get your prescriptions anymore. And it hurts those communities. And that was what was on the ballot. I was in California multiple times. We have a lot of races in California that we won on the ballot. But like you said, the voters of California even said enough is enough and passed that ballot initiative to say, we're going to end smash and grab. This is lunacy. And you can just go steal from any store and not get prosecuted. It's affecting everybody in that state. And they finally rose up against it. And fired the DA, who was such a failure. You know, it was a Democrat who replaced him, but at least it's somebody who's going to prosecute criminals. And it's not a partisan thing. It's a common sense thing. And I think common sense prevailed on Tuesday, Noel.
Well, I'm glad to be called stupid if stupid is raising your children and thinking that you know what your children need better than the government knows.
Right.
You can call me stupid all day long, and I'm going to wear it as a badge of honor because I'm never giving up that right. I don't care what these people say. I know my children.
They want to try to convince your kid in school to get a gender assignment surgery, and they don't want you as the parent to know about it? Give me a break. You know, that kind of stuff was on the ballot. And people, like you said, people were watching that, and they were voting based on those issues.
If I could get you, you know, I keep hearing this threat to democracy, right, issue. And it kind of wears me out because when you talk about the workarounds that they've done and in complete contravention and violation of the law in so many different ways, it's almost as if those are just suggestions. That the whole Federal Register is just a collective group of words that are just mere suggestions, and we're going around it each and every day. And we talk about, you know, the other side being a threat to democracy, but we don't ever look at ourselves in the mirror critically on that side. I mean, when you look at some of what they've done and what they continue to do and what they're trying to do now already, I mean, the next day after the election, trying to do things to tie the hands of the incoming president, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's childish.
Yeah,
I mean, we're playing child games.
Yeah, this is the United States of America. But consider the source. You know, the same people that were calling Trump a threat to democracy were the people that literally shivved Joe Biden in the back and threw him in the river after 14 million Americans went to the polls and chose him as the nominee on the Democrat side to run for president. What happened to that democracy, Newell? And so not only did they get rid of the democratically elected nominee for president, Joe Biden, they replaced him with someone who never got a single vote, Kamala Harris. And by the way, there's a reason she didn't get a single vote when she ran for president, because she was unpopular. You know, I was in states like Michigan, and blue-collar workers who voted for Joe Biden 4 years ago did not vote for Kamala Harris, not because they're racist. Those same people voted for Barack Obama. So how do you reconcile that? What they had an issue with is the fact that Kamala didn't relate to blue-collar workers. Kamala Harris supported the Green New Deal, which says your taxpayer dollars should go and give a $7,500 tax credit for you to buy an EV car that's made in China instead of a fossil fuel car that's made in Michigan. And thousands of people in Michigan were laid off because of those stupid policies that Kamala Harris supported. And then she wondered why she didn't relate to blue-collar workers. So they don't want to look in the mirror and say, gee whiz, maybe it's our policies, maybe it's the Green New Deal and these things we pushed that crush American jobs and crush American workers that people voted against. So we'll just call them racist and sexist. I hope they don't listen to the American voters, because we are, and we did listen to those voters, and we laid out an actual agenda for blue-collar workers, and they responded. And guess what, Newell? We're going to deliver for those families. We're going to actually bring really good common-sense policies that will lower costs for families. You're going to pay less at the grocery store. You're going to pay less at the pump and in your utility bills, and you're going to have a secure border. You're going to have a government that starts working for you. Trump brought in Elon Musk to start looking at right-sizing and making government more efficient. How about that? You know, that's something that's been needed for decades, to make government actually work better for the people of this country instead of for themselves. It's going to be so refreshing to see those kind of reforms proposed and then brought to the House and Senate floor to pass to the president.
Steve, as an American citizen, I sit here on a Friday at 11:21, and we still have races that have not been called. We'll figure this out in less time than we did last election. But this has got to be concerning, right? I mean, this is what happens in third world countries when you can't count votes. I mean, we can put people on the moon. We can shoot a rocket in the air and have it now land back on the pad on its own. We can do all kinds of things, but we can't count ballots fast for whatever reason.
Yeah, how embarrassing, and it's frustrating. And this is what breeds distrust with people. And by the way, more than half of those races that have not been called are all in, you know, our favorite state of California. You know, California seems to mess everything up, but there's no excuse for it. You know, you had problems in other states like Florida years ago, Broward County with all the hanging chads. They cleaned up their mess in Florida. And guess what? By 9 o'clock on election night, the entire state of Florida was counted. And Florida's a large state. You know, Texas, another large state, was fully counted. There is no reason why California, you know, we've still got a number of seats, and a number of them are leaning Republican right now, but they still are waiting on more precincts to count. Like, why does it take so long? Everybody should be finished on election night. There's no excuse for it. And so, you know, this is a California problem. They have a lot of problems, but just basic counting of votes is one of them. You know, I think it's another sign of how proud we should be of our state. Louisiana had no issues like that. And I think it's really, it's really a testament to the, you know, kind of elections that we run. And we make sure that everybody has their vote counted. Nancy Landry did a great job as Secretary of State to make sure that with record turnout in Louisiana, and I want to thank the voters of Louisiana, not just for electing me for another term, but for showing up in record numbers, whoever you voted for. The fact that we had a record turnout and there were no issues, Newell, we had our results by roughly 9 o'clock at night. You know, that's a testament to Nancy Landry and the qualified people that don't get a lot of attention at the Secretary of State's office working with all the clerks of our state. You know, because when you look at a state like California, where you still have all these races not counted, let's also remember a state like Louisiana that used to have problems. You know, we sent our elections commissioner to jail back in the 1990s. We cleaned up our mess just like Florida cleaned up theirs. And that's something we should be proud of.
you recognize those folks, because it really is something that we set the bar on in this country, and if more people mimic our processes here in Louisiana, we would be much better served, right?
Absolutely. And again, no reason that every state can't do this. You know, there are states that had problems, and I was in the state legislature when we confronted the problems we had. And they were, you know, they were not easy fights, but we did it. I've talked to the Florida legislators who fixed their mess, you know, after that Bush versus Gore race where they, you know, they literally had the U.S. Supreme Court need to step in and stop the foolishness that was going on in Broward County. And they finally cleaned theirs up, where now you have not only clean and fair elections, but you have the results by 9 o'clock at night. We have technology today. You can actually get this done quickly. And there's no reason for a state like California to still have all these races not resolved.
Yeah, it's just a level of incompetence that I just don't understand. And collectively, as Americans, we should be embarrassed by this. I mean, I fully embrace states' rights, and I would never want to move away from that. But, you know, at some point in time, we have to take ownership and responsibility for what we do and get it fixed, right? Execute,
yeah,
for once.
Some sort of national standard, and having the results on election night should be part of that standard.
Absolutely. Steve Scalise, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations again on your reelection, and we truly appreciate taking time out of your busy schedule to join us this morning. Thank you, sir.
Thanks again, Newell. Great to be with you. God bless.
504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back with Andronika Morris from Housing NOLA when we return. Stay with us. That's right, folks. We've actually had some folks come by, and they've registered to win the Saints-Falcon tickets as well as the LSU-Alabama tickets. So you don't want to miss that opportunity, and you don't want to miss the food either. So come on by. I can smell it from over here. You want to come on by and visit us, and they will they can give you a tutorial if you want about what's going on with generators and how to deal with same. All right, folks, we are joined by Andronika my papers are flying all over the place. By Andronika Morris, Housing NOLA. Andronika, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, good morning, Newell. Sorry. Yeah, thank you for having us back, having me back.
It's been a long week, Andronika, and it's a Friday. It's like nothing seems to be flowing this morning. It's like it's crazy. But anyway, a big win. A big win for Leslie Harris and her initiative on the 2% of the budget being set aside for affordable housing. You and I talked about this in advance of the election, and I raised some of my concerns about how that spend would be made and what was going to be the outcome, and, you know, and how real was it going to be. And we talked a little bit about that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so first of all, it's a big win for the people of New Orleans. We are so grateful to Leslie Harris, Councilwoman Harris, for her leadership, and the rest of the council for getting this on the ballot. But the people of New Orleans deserve all of the credit for this victory, and we need to listen to them very carefully, because they spoke definitively and very clearly that they heard the arguments against this, the concerns against it, and they said very clearly, we do want you to invest some of our money in our homes. And so what's next is making that real. So we have right now a budget. The city of New Orleans is going through its budget process right now. There's an opportunity for the council and the mayor's office to heed the 75% of New Orleanians who told them they wanted them to invest in their housing, and to do so starting now in this budget. There's about $60 million that the city of New Orleans is talking about appropriating in the 2025 cycle. That money needs to be clearly appropriated and invested in addressing short-term and long-term needs. And so we are going to be working with community to make and our partners and the council and the mayor's office to make sure that that budget is reflective of those values. And then we get on to next year. The advisory board will convene to talk about how to administer the trust fund dollars that are going to be available in the 2026 budget year.
So you mentioned Did you say 16 or 60 million?
60. $62 million dollars is currently.
But just so we don't confuse. So we don't confuse
it. Two different things.
It's two different things. Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
That's right. So these are programs that were created already. These were existing funds. And this is one of the reasons why we pushed back so hard against doing nothing, was that there's money there right now that needs to be administered, that needs to be clearly invested. And some of it needs to be put out immediately, and it can be put out immediately. The city has programs already. And that is what the people voted for. They said, we want this process that will add additional money and clearly lay out how it's going to be invested. So we hope the council and the mayor heed that call and follow that right now with the money that they already have. The money that they already have, the money that they need to invest. We have a crisis. There is no reason to wait. They're making proposals or how the money is going to get spent. It needs to be a mixture of immediate needs met, everything from helping people stay in their homes, helping our vulnerable seniors, our senior homeowners who are struggling with insurance, helping them stay in their homes, and as well as making investments so that we can continue to build to the standards that we need to meet.
And you're pretty confident that this is going to happen, because all of what you just said is not actually what they voted on, but be that as it may, the city had already come out and said they were going to do this anyway, whether or not this amendment to the city charter passed or not. It's just a recognition that of the 2% of the overall budget would be associated to affordable housing. I mean, they were doing this already. I know in the past.
Well, so that's a good point. Yeah, that's a point of clarification that needs to be like cleared up. What they're doing now, what they've done in the past, is different. Is dramatically different from what the trust fund is. Number one. Saying you're going to do something, the city in various incarnations has made commitments and has dishonored those commitments and has not made those investments in housing. And certainly not taking general operating funds. The money that we're talking about now are HUD, are largely HUD dollars that they are required to spend. It's leftover money from some older programs that they are required to spend. And they have chosen to spend them on housing. And that has not been done consistently. That's why we've been failing the last few years, because they've not been honoring those commitments. They say one thing and they have done something else. They have been wildly inconsistent. We have in the past budget cycles with programs like the Healthy Homes Initiative, where the mayor introduced a budget that didn't fund a program that is critical to the city's success. That's happened a number of years in a row. That's what's been happening in the past. The trust fund will stop a lot of those shenanigans, because there will be money available expressly and explicitly for housing that has to be obligated towards housing. And they can no longer choose to do something else with it and pretend like they've made a commitment and then dishonor that commitment. So that's the difference, and I want to make sure that that's very clear, because the backup
I'm glad that you cleared that up.
Alternative, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you cleared that up, but I'll make the following observation, and I think you'll agree with me. That's one
Maybe.
Thing. You still have to execute, right? So we've had money, FEMA money, in order to do a number of things since after Katrina, and here we stand. And I think we still got 40% of the money to spend. We haven't executed. And my whole thing is, there's more than one way to skin a cat. If you want to delay, just because it's appropriated and it's in a budget cycle, it doesn't mean they're going to spend it. And we know that all too well, because we've had federal dollars, as you just pointed out, that have been available for years and years and years. And actually, we've had federal audits come in and write us up for not spending the money timely. And, so we have internal problems bigger than just money. And that's, I always say, you need to have the ability to receive. And you and I talked about that. And what that means is, when you get the money, you got to be able to act on it. It doesn't help anybody if it's sitting in a bank account drawing interest.
That's right. That's right. You know, and that was also one of the big changes that we were able to get with this trust fund, with these dollars, is the groups, the city departments that are managing the housing money now, they will not be the ones administering these dollars. They will continue to focus on managing the federal dollars. And one of the things that we want to see happen is that there's more scrutiny applied to how those dollars are administered, and there's coordination. These funds are going to two agencies who have a track record of pushing dollars out the door: the Finance Authority of New Orleans and the Redevelopment Authority of New Orleans, both of whom have done amazing jobs post-Katrina getting federal funds and pushing them out the door. You mentioned the FEMA dollars. You might even be thinking about and talking about, for example, the Resiliency District in Gentilly, which the city is now, the city of New Orleans has now been moving on. The one thing that people talk about is that those dollars had multiple partners. The Redevelopment Authority was one of the partners. They got their dollars out the door years ago. Years ago. Not last year, 2 years ago. Years ago, they're part of the grants which invested in people's homes, did stormwater management projects at people's homes surrounding the Resilience District. The Redevelopment Authority got that money and got it out the door years ago. These two agencies have a track record. The Finance Authority stood up the Soft Second program that was ahead of the city's Soft Second program. They got their dollars out the door years ago. So one of the things that we talked about here, and community was very clear when there was conversation about designing this program, we had to, in order for community to vote for it, they needed to see performance. And we could not pretend that the same actors right now who are struggling, who we need to hold them accountable, why not deputize folks who have a track record of doing this and giving them the resources to do it? And that's what's going to happen with this money. These dollars are going to, with the council's directive on the programs and the priorities, go to agencies that have a track record of pushing this money out the door.
Well, that's encouraging.
Into people's homes.
That's encouraging, yes, to hear that, because that's been a problem that we've had historically. You and I have talked about it. I've sensed the frustration in your voice many, many times about this,
yes,
issue, where we talk and talk and talk, and we got the money sitting there. We don't spend, we don't implement, we don't execute, and we get nowhere fast. And meanwhile, since you and I started talking, the number of affordable housing units that we need, that number grows exponentially every year.
Correct. And that's why it's important. That's why it was important to get these resources, because we do need more money, and to make sure that we had a process that is as rock solid as you can design. It still requires oversight. It still requires engagement and accountability. And fortunately for us, there's going to be a big accountability opportunity next year as well. As the council works on this, many of them are going to be running for office next year. We will be able to hold them accountable on how they act in this budget cycle, on how they move around housing over the next few months, and how they administer, how they appropriate and designate the first tranches of dollars from the trust fund. There's going to be a built-in accountability for all of them.
And that's the best time to do it. Got to get to a break. Andronica Morris, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Newell. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. On a text line, it says, Newell, why weren't you this strong for Trump before the election? Now that Trump won, you act like you were supportive all the time. I call BS on you. I haven't said anything positive about Donald Trump. Not a word. What I said was that the Democrats have accused Republican voters of so many things, and I was calling out them. Governor Kathy Hochul of New York referred to Republican voters as un-American if they voted for Trump. What I said was that the only way they feel like Trump won was because Republican and independent voters, because independents are the ones that decide this election, were racist and sexist. They had to pull the isms out. Racism and sexism is the only reason why Donald Trump won. They are attacking American voters because they didn't get their way. And they're asking questions like, how could this possibly happen? Really? Well, why don't you look at where you stand on issues? And maybe if you were honest with yourself and get out of that little bubble that you live in, where none of this impacts you, like crime or otherwise, because that bastion of conservative voters that live out there on that left coast, otherwise known as California, guess what they did? They retreated on a whole bunch of progressive platforms. Guess what they also did? They got rid of a progressive mayor and a progressive DA and a number of others. That's what they did. I wonder what ism applies to them. That was the point that I was making. That's not anything to say that he was any more palatable to me as a candidate. We have 4 years. I'd much rather had elected a Republican than we had the possibility of eight. I said that all along. That was one of the downsides to this. But the Republicans chose a candidate, and he won overwhelmingly. Go figure. How'd that happen? Everyone's saying, how could that possibly happen? Well, why don't you look yourself in the mirror? And as I said before, if government's going to try and stand in between me in the manner in which I raise my children and tell me that I don't know what's in the best interest of my children, that they know better than I, call me stupid, call me whatever ism you want to call me, I'll wear it with a badge of honor because I have been attempting to formulate the moral compass of my kids from the day that I adopted two children. And I'm not going to stand idly by and say nothing about that fact when they're trying to stick themselves in between me and what's in the best interest of our kids and what's going on in grammar schools and high schools and everything else. That issue alone is enough for me to tank any Democrat that's out there because they have lost their mind on so many of these issues. These are common sense issues. America's not ready for most of what they have been proposing. And they still don't get it. And they wonder why the working man who's decided that he couldn't afford to go to college and is now being called upon to pay for the education of others is pissed off. Can you believe that they cannot rationalize that thought process and gain a better understanding of why that is? But it can only be that we're racist or we're sexist. That can be the only reason. Because they are perfect. And I will tell you one thing. I'm not the center of any universe. For me, my Lord is the center of my universe, not me. And as soon as they figure out that they're not the center of any, they would be better served. We'll be right back.